These are the Target Files, discussing the novelizations and audiobooks of classic and now also new series Doctor Who stories, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time." Hello and a very happy new year to all listeners of Doctor Who Target Files. This is episode 89, looking at the first ever Doctor Who New Year's Day special, Resolution, written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Wayne Yip. This is Mike in Swansea.
And a happy new year from Alex in Exeter. So, yeah, what did we think of this rather full throttle hour episode of, you know, Doctor Who on New Year's Day? Completely new idea. No Christmas episode, but a New Year's Day episode this year. What did you think of it, Mike?
As I think I may have said during the run of season 11, I find myself watching these episodes first of all on broadcast, and perhaps I find them a bit of a chore because I'm thinking about things to say in this podcast. But as we speak, I've just got the revelation of the Dalek in the episode, sorry spoilers folks, up on screen on my second watch, and I just seem to be, like a few of the episodes in season 11, not all of them, I seem to be enjoying it a lot more on the not a lot more, I did enjoy it on the day, but seeing much more to it on this second viewing.
Yeah, I think I was the same, but I got the same fun level out of it on the second once I filmed the first one. I really enjoyed it. I thought this finally showed Chris Chibnall can do. I think if he just tries not to be too politically correct anyway, just, you know, does a full throttle action fun story, and I thought it was great from the start to finish. I know there's probably been a lot of moans on the social media about it. I know everybody's not happy. Well, I thought, you know, for a full throttle hour episode, I thought it was really good fun.
Certainly the most fun seasonal special we've had for quite a while, thinking back. Possibly as far back as Voyage of the Damned, have we had many sort of fun ones since then? Perhaps a little bit more seriousness with the first Moffat one, The Christmas Carol?
Yeah, I think it definitely had that fun. I don't think there has. I think the ones since Voyage of the Damned have been a bit more serious. You know, they've been quite scary or try to be too Christmassy. I think the balance was just right in this, and you had lots of sort of jokey fun bits, you know, the Doctor and her fans or companions, and then you had these really hardcore, quite scary. But, you know, everybody's saying that's the most scariest Dalek ever, apparently, in Doctor Who, is what they've been saying on Twitter the most this week. Well, that was some really scary moments in this, and I just think it worked so well because the balance was right. You know, I just sometimes wish what Chris Chibnall wrote like this for the whole season, because it would have been so much better.
Does it suggest to you we should have had maybe one returning villain? Obviously, the Daleks are the most iconic within the most recent season.
I think so, because I think the way he's done the Dalek in this episode is that it's not, you know, normal everyday Dalek appears and everything happens. The way he actually made it sort of rebuild itself and become something new, I thought was a really clever twist. And the whole sort of having to use a human for nearly the whole episode to get to that state of being the Dalek we all know and like. I never know, because I don't know if Chris Chibnall was slightly semi-forced to have an old villain because of the ratings or something, but I think it worked really well.
Yes, I think he famously said at Comic-Con launch in San Diego in the summer that they'd filmed most of the season and he hadn't seen any old monsters on set yet. Obviously, we only had a brief appearance, really, of the Dalek as we know it in its casing, its made-up casing.
Yeah, that was a really good bit, how he put the casing together, I thought, in this episode. But the thing with Chris Chibnall is never believe what he said, because he's the master of, you know, sort of misdirection. Like, you know, you got that all the time with Broadchurch. You know, you'd say something and it'd be the complete opposite. So I think there's always plans to maybe have one old villain in this season and then maybe next season have the same sort of ratio maybe.
Yes, looking at the start of the episode, very atmospheric, a global story told over many centuries, filmed very cinematically, I think, by Wayne Yip.
the great bit at the beginning where you sort of found out the reason why the Dalek had been sort of taken to bits and hidden base. It was really well done. I thought it was in beautiful shots and very sort of cinematic sort of long shots and smoke and everything. It did look very impressive. And then I thought sort of when we went back to base, you know, in Sheffield, and our sort of archaeological dig was shot really well in those sewers.
And the shots of a lot of the Menace, and even later on when the TARDIS appeared again in Graham's flat, I think he was using quite a lot of Dutch angles, Al. Do you know what they are?
Do, just remind me, because I know people might not know.
You sort of film at a slightly tilted angle, because the theory is it aids the human eye in terms of jeopardy, you know, along with the whole thing with the music and the way the dialogue is written. It's an old cinematic trick going back quite a long way, but I thought Wayne used it really well in this episode.
Yeah, there's some really nice shots when you're in sort of in, you know, Graham's house and Dan's on the chair. It was good fun as well. And sort of the way the TARDIS is framed, but I think the TARDIS did look stunning again all way throughout this episode. I think they got the lighting so right in the TARDIS, making it look big and huge and lovely again, I think. But I just think, you know, the Menace in this episode was really good. And a bit when you first met the really nasty sort of squiddy Dalek, you know, and she went onto her back, basically. It was really good fun of all.
I think a lot of us long-term fans could tell it was probably Nick Briggs's voice, but they added a great, almost an extra layer of coldness to it, didn't they? More of a sinister layer, first of all.
Well, I think most of it was Nick Briggs's voice, but I think there was bits with the great actress from Fresh Meat sort of being mixed in as well, I think.
Charlotte Ritchie, yeah, I thought a really stellar performance from her. Wanted to talk about that initial dynamic relationship. It did have me wondering. You had a backstory set up between these two archaeologists about them sharing a kiss at a New Year's Eve party, sort of straight away, and it got me wondering why Chris hadn't done sort of similar with all these new companions who had a vague knowledge of each other before they met. You know, he was seeming to establish those two almost straight away, whereas we're still looking for certain elements of a character like Yaz. You know, how come he could do that with two sort of peripheral characters straight away, and he struggled at times with some of the increased TARDIS team.
Though Yaz again was, you know, on good form and stuff, he still thinks he's the weakest one out of the three, unfortunately. And I thought, you know, talk about it in a bit more detail. Well, yeah, it's very interesting because he got all that backstory for the two archaeologists in about 5 seconds. And even the bits he's got himself into a little bit of trouble, you know, the sort of the gay character who is immediately killed off, you know, you got to know a lot about him as well. And it's just like with Yaz, we're 11 episodes in now, and we still, like, don't know enough about her still. I think that's the problem I have with Yaz. But even though we know about her family background now, before, you know, Demons of the Punjab, we still don't know a great deal about her social impact. Why she's a police officer, why she does this, you know, those sort of things are still being left out. And he did this great thing with those two archaeological characters where you got to know them, you got to find out they were in a relationship. And I think that was only about 5-6 minutes. You got to know all this stuff about those two great actors really quickly. Like, I think he can do that, but he sort of, you know, I think he's getting spread a little bit too thin by having three companions, unfortunately.
Yes, we know he can do it from Broadchurch because there's multiple characters in that, and you get certainly essence throughout the three seasons, new characters introduced each season. You do get the essence of a character within a few scenes. What is it about this sci-fi premise? You know, how do you think, Al, he stretched it out too much?
Yeah, I think, as we said, he can definitely sort of in a page tell you everything about each character. And I think, unfortunately, you know, he's wanted to stretch out, you know, he has his character so much so you don't find anything out immediately and this gives you space in the episode. But unfortunately, I don't think he's quite managed that with her. Definitely with, you know, the Bradley Walsh sort of family, that works so well. I think Bradley Walsh is fantastic in this episode again.
Yes, key characters, of course. Jodie, always an iconic moment. The first time an incarnation meets the Daleks, or a Dalek in this case. I thought it was an excellent debut. She really showed the assertiveness towards it, and we saw a bit of a bit of gymnastics as well, didn't she, with the explosion and the forward roll going away.
Oh, definitely. There were some great bits with the sort of interaction of the Dalek and sort of using sort of mind stepping the 3D-ness, the sort of, you know, how you can interact with it and trying to find ways around. I thought there's some really good jeopardy between her and the Dalek in this episode.
Yeah, possibly the most iconic of the new series Doctors since Eccleston in Dalek, because I think back to David Tennant in Doomsday, perhaps that was a bit overshadowed by Rose leaving and by the Cybermen as well. And then we had Matt in Victory of the Daleks, which has never been a hugely popular one, although he does have a very good angry scene with the Dalek in that. And then we had Peter Capaldi in the Chibnall episode Into the Dalek. So I think I'd put Jodie and Chris's debut stories of the Daleks a cut above the other three.
Yeah, I think so, for the same reason, though. We won't mention Victory of the Daleks because it is terrible. But yeah, I think the sort of anger and sort of determination, what the, you know, you can never get away from the Daleks, was played so well by Jodie, and a sort of interaction with them. They think they're so confident, they think they can beat everyone, and the sort of way she came over was brilliant, I thought. So, yeah, definitely, I'd put hers up with Chris's sort of interaction, you know, and Dalek. This is still one of my favourite, the modern era Dalek episodes.
Yeah, it's interesting that those two stories I've just compared feature a lone Dalek, Al. Does that, do you think, allow the gravitas and the drama to go up a notch?
I think so, because, you know, when you've got hundreds of Daleks screaming at you, you sort of get a bit lost. You do like the actual big action scene, you get hundreds of Daleks shooting people, but I think the sort of interaction with one Dalek, where the Doctor's up against one foe and he's having to deal with it, works a lot better, I think.
And that's, of course, down to the direction and writing as well. I think it was it Joe Ahern who did Dalek back in 05?
Yeah, I think so. And it's just, as I keep saying, that once you give Chris Chibnall an actual good air and a good idea, his script is fantastic. I thought the actual script to this episode was really on the ball from the full episode. I was gripped from like start to finish. So I know there's a lot of complaints about it, unfortunately, still.
Yes, people have brought up that one scene that was a bit of a drag was Ryan having the heart-to-heart with his father. You know, as I alluded to, it was a bit of a chore watching it on the night, but I found that more intense on the second watch just now.
I really liked that scene. I thought that scene was really needed because you had the sort of dad who didn't, you thought, you know, for most of us, didn't really care about his son, and then he just said exactly what most people would think if you'd been sort of banned for most of your life. And I thought that scene was really well done. People really been moaning about that scene, saying it was too dry, and you think, you know, all too long, and you think, you know, there's that great scene in Deep Breath, you know, Peter Capaldi, and that goes on for, and a breaststroke goes on for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and then I suppose the action, as we've seen with a number of Chibnall episodes since he took over, really did ramp up towards the end.
Oh, totally, from that sort of, you know, sort of, I thought this episode was quite well-paced all the way. I didn't think it had the normal Chibnall drag problem, I think I'd like to call it, in a way he likes to take forever to get to the point. I thought this had quite good pace from start to finish, and it definitely did ramp up the end when you had the sort of big explosions, you know, and the Dalek being melted, so I spoiled it there. But yeah, I think there's some great bits all the way through this episode.
Yes, and for anyone who thinks Doctor Who might be losing popularity and be slightly out of the public eye in this country, we did have an amusing tweet from GCHQ on the 2nd of January here in the UK saying they'd managed to clean up overnight after the Daleks attacked.
Oh, that was just great. They got into the fun of it, because those bits in GCHQ where the whole server room gets blown up are just brilliant. There's some great explosions and noise. Well, I think the other thing, what's really good about this episode, I have to mention, is Sagan's music. The way he ramped up everything through little gestures and little music, and those guitar bits are fantastic in this.
Yes, made quite a few notes on Sagan's score. I thought he started off with quite sort of atmospheric beats with the montage of the history of the Dalek being split into three. We had quite a few more atmospheric beats down in the archaeological dig, and then we saw Charlotte Ritchie's character taken over, and he went really into heavy guitar then, which was very reminiscent of action scenes in Torchwood, I thought.
Oh, well, definitely. I think there was some really good sort of, you know, the whole sort of when she's driving the car at ridiculous speed and all the sort of action with her character, really well done by Sagan's music.
That heavy guitar is very sort of guttural, doesn't it? It really sort of takes you into the idea of this horrific creature growing inside somebody or taking them over.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I just think, you know, I think there was a slight, you know, guitar riff on the episode, when the sort of riff they used for Captain John, you know, the Spike's character from Torchwood. There was definitely little riffs there, I think.
Very much so. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Now you said, Al, it does remind me of that.
That sort of entrance where you meet, you know, Captain John for the first, you know, I always like to say Spike with Buffy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, James Masters.
But that sort of entrance in Kiss Bang Bang is buried, that sort of guitar riff that got used quite a bit for when they're chasing, you know, the police car and the Daleks in control. I thought it was just some great scenes. I just can't understand why people have found this episode either very boring or very slow, because it's full on action paid, I think, from the start to finish.
And continuing on with the music, I thought we got quite a funky jazz beat then, as the overtaken Charlotte Ritchie character was breaking in to try and make her casing.
Yeah, there's some great bits with the whole sort of casing, sort of an interesting retrospect, you know, to how the Doctor made her sonic screwdriver this evening. You got the same sort of outlook on how the Dalek gets his casing back, sort of very retro and sort of putting everything together.
Yes, I wonder if Wayne Yip went back to Jamie Charles' shots from The Woman Who Fell to Earth, sort of recreated them in a way.
Yeah, because there's definitely that bit, there's a pretty similar shot of Charlotte Ritchie wearing the welding goggles, what the Doctor's wearing in the first scene, I think. So I think that is definitely sort of tried to reenact that, I think.
And talking about good hints, towards the end, more than a few sort of references to Doomsday with a person being sucked out of the TARDIS.
Oh, well, definitely. Sort of, you know, that's the only way you get rid of the Dalek. I think Doomsday, there's a lot of reference to other things, I think, in this.
Not so much a setup for the next series, which we sadly have to wait at least 12 months for. All in all, overall, a pretty exciting one.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, unfortunately, we've got to wait another 12 months, so that will fly by late years, do, unfortunately. But I think it was definitely one of the better ones, and I think it's slightly annoying because you look at it and think, well, why couldn't he have done that for the whole season? You know, when the right, I mean, good, our next season will be better, because I've said before in the podcast, I think we did have the Torchwood season one problem with this season.
In terms of dramatic license, it has been asked by a few people, do you think it would have been better drama if Ryan's dad had died at the end?
I don't think so, because maybe it might have added more to his sort of, you know, reason for being upset, maybe, because he hadn't, you know, lost his gran at the beginning of the season and maybe tied it together. I think that quite worked nicely in actually having a happy ending. Why do we always have to have a sort of despairing ending?
I can see people's point of view on that. It would have added to the drama, you know, the fact that Graham had sort of more or less guided him along and Ryan had actually forgiven him at that time.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you wanted more dramatic or tension, as you sometimes need, I think that would have worked. Well, I actually quite like the way they dealt with the whole sort of Ryan and his dad sort of situation, because it was definitely built up through the episode to really like his dad, basically. I think that scene where people were moaning about in the cafe is really good, where Brian basically tells him exactly how he feels and what he should have done, basically. And I think those sort of scenes right to the end where, you know, they actually get on and hug each other at the end work.
Also highlights that a number of story strands have been tied up for Ryan, in particular him accepting Graham and calling him his granddad now, and this forgiveness of his father, and that sort of can be juxtaposed against what we said about Yaz. You know, she needs to have a lot more background, I think, in season 12.
Maybe, you know, because they've sort of tied up a lot of that, you know, Ryan and Graham thing. Are they going to get rid of Ryan and Graham? That's the thing. Like, I've got this feeling they might get rid of those two because it's all been tied up, and then there's lots more room for Yaz, maybe. Well, I don't know, because I actually, at the moment, well, I could change. I prefer Ryan and Graham as companions to Yaz still.
True, Altrual. I think I know Bradley Walsh is starting a chat show for ITV, a daytime one, as well as The Chase later this year, so perhaps his appearances will be cut down.
As I know, Bradley Walsh does an awful lot on ITV. I've noticed there's about four different game shows, plus, you know, his workload will probably be more, probably.
I know they do bulk film The Chase, and they managed to fit it in between his commitments in Cardiff.
I did it, I thought, because The Chase is always on, so, you know, this is a very good quiz show night in England, what's on ITV. But yeah, I don't know, because at the moment, I like the way they've got Graham and Brian working, and Yaz always feels slightly in the background to me, but maybe they'll make her more important in the next season, maybe I will change my opinion there.
You know, just what if at the start of the season he just added a little bit more layer, perhaps, you know, that, I don't know, Yaz and Ryan had gone to the same gym or something after being in school together, so at least they knew each other as adults.
I know, but, it's, you know, just like you need something else, don't you? Because at the moment, it's like, well, you just met up with each other before meeting the doctor. It's, I think there's that big gap that doesn't work, really.
Yeah, and as we said earlier on, we know Chibnall can establish characters very quickly, certainly in Broadchurch, and he did it the night before with Resolution.
Yeah, I know this is the really annoying thing, because he can, you know, give you characters, give you a whole backstory in 5 minutes, a couple of pages of dialogue, and you know everything, like we did with those two, where I think still, with Yaz, we don't quite know everything, you know, there's sort of, we've met her annoying family, and know a bit more about her. I think there's still a lot of room, and I think that's mainly to do with having three companions, having to get three people's backstories into, you know, a 45-minute episode, and that's why that hasn't slightly worked.
Alex, a score for your thoughts on Resolution.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I loved it on the first time. I watched it again today on the second time. I think it works even better. I thought the acting from all the priority characters, you know, were brilliant. I thought there's some really good acting in it. I thought there was some really good comical flourishes from the Doctor and the companions, and Bradley Walsh was really, really good. He sort of went up a gear again, as he seems to do. Sagan's music was fantastic. There was lots of really good action bits where his sort of music ramped up and made it even better. So I can't really see anything to get annoyed about. I know people on Twitter sphere being, you know, you should be annoyed about it's too politically correct, or it should be annoyed because the gay guy got killed in the first 5 minutes. That means it's all homophobic, which is rubbish. So I'm probably going to give it a 10, I think.
Very good, Al. I'm going to be close. Possibly just because I found it that little bit lethargic on the first watch. I might mark off half a point. But music, very, very good. Performances, very, very good. Still a little disappointed with the Az. You know, I'm going to keep bringing it up. But it held together very well. Really does wipe the floor with quite a few seasonal specials we've had before. But I'm going to stick to, I think, 9.5 for me, Al.
Well, that's still really good because I think, yeah, that there are niggles with, like, you know, the whole Yaz thing is my niggle as well. But I couldn't really, you know, mention that. But I think, you know, if you look at Christmas specials, we have to say it's Christmas special, even though it's on New Year's Day. I think it is one of the better ones. I think it goes down on the list with things like the Snowman and, you know, the Christmas Carol and Warriors of the Damned. It's definitely up there with one of the better ones, I think.
Yes, I had wondered for years, ever since we've had Russell and Stephen, really, why they hadn't gone for the Daleks on a seasonal special, as it might boost ratings. Now, that might go against the fact that it hadn't really been advertised, apart from that 1 second trailer we got on Christmas Day where we heard the exterminate word at the end. But I think it worked out pretty well. And the other thing I'd like to see them try on a Christmas special now would be Multi-Doctor. You know, maybe that's the chance to get McGann back on a Christmas Day, or perhaps they could get the magic touch of Eccleston being Jodie's mate back one day.
Well, or maybe. Well, I don't know, because it doesn't seem they've done Dalek. I know they did Cybermen one Christmas, didn't they? Was it the Last Doctor, the David Morrissey one? That seemed to work. But I know the Multi-Doctor one would be a great idea on a Christmas Day. You want, or Christmas Day or New Year's Day, depending when they're going to put the next one. But it's like, you know, you want something a bit bigger, I find, at Christmas or New Year's Day. Because I think New Year's Day does work as well as Christmas Day. I did miss it slightly on Christmas Day because the unfortunately, of BBC's TV schedule was pretty dire on Christmas Day, not having Doctor Who there now. And I think it still should be there, even though New Year's Day did work. But yeah, I think so you want something big. You want something fun. You want something big. And you want lots of action. And I think this one covered it, even though the ratings were absolutely dire for it, I personally think. Well, I don't understand that, concluding it was on New Year's Day and there was no other thing really good on at the time. I think people were still out or hangover from New Year's Eve, I think.
Well, I was back in work, unfortunately, on Wednesday the 2nd, so I look forward to having Doctor Who the night before. Bit of excitement, and then Luther.
Oh, well, Luther's just been fantastic. I think, you know, this week hasn't, you know, if you're not feeling a bit, you know, a bit down from Christmas, I think this week on BBC has been rather good, and you've had Luther on every night, and you've had good drama. But it's like, yeah, I think it did work on New Year's Day. I just don't understand why the ratings were so bad. Well, I think because, you know, people, I don't know if people just do everything on catch-up these days, I think.
Yes, Doctor Who news-wise, Al. Exciting that Kaleidoscope, the non-profit organisation that specialises in locating missing TV programmes, have announced a new selection of audio recordings of some of the missing Doctor Who episodes, some which are an improvement of the ones which already existed.
Yeah, I saw that today, and I think that's a really interesting thing. It's basically lots of recordings of much better quality of different episodes. I think they've got quite a few of the Dalek Master Plan. They've got ones from the Highlander, Moon Base. So they've got quite a lot. In fact, this is how it was, a lot of stuff was done. I think the guys at Kaleidoscope, who do an awful lot of this sort of stuff, are going to basically clean it, and then hopefully we might get more animations because they're having the recordings, hopefully.
The full set, Al, are listed on DoctorWhoNews.net. Yes, we have all 12 episodes of Dalek's Master Plan, all 4 episodes of The Massacre, all 4 episodes of The Ark, all 4 episodes of The Celestial Toymaker, the complete 4 of The Gunfighters, the complete 4 of The Savages, War Machines episode, yeah, all of The War Machines, all of The Smugglers, all of 10th Planet, all of Power of the Daleks, all of the Highlanders, and all of the Underwater Menace, and the Moonbase Episode 1. Wouldn't it be great if we were reading those out for actual episodes one day too?
Oh, it would be good if we could actually find the actual TV episodes. But I think now that we have the soundtracks, I think the animation teams are just going to add the animation to it now. We actually have a really good soundtrack. So I think those will come as nice sort of Blu-ray DVDs at some point in the near future, I reckon, because now we have really good soundtracks all being patched together. So you've got the actual dialogue, so you just need somebody to do a really good animation like they did on the, you know, like they've done on the other things.
A question for you, Alex. We forgot to mention something last episode. Do you know what it is?
Probably not, because it's been Chris will remind me.
We forgot to talk about the cover of Marco Polo.
Oh, did we? Yeah, we did forget to talk. Yeah, right. We did forget to talk about the covers of Marco Polo.
We both failed to pluck that one out of the air, Al. So
We did. I completely forgot because we've been doing all TV episodes, so I haven't mentioned that for a while.
Yeah, we were getting back into the groove of books again and audiobooks.
We will.
I've just pulled it up here now. It is published in 11th of April 1985. It was a David McAllister cover. Mm-hmm. We have Marco Polo himself on the right-hand side of the cover, looking out. Kublai Khan in his red splendor. We have Ping Chow, and we have the various hordes of horse riders amongst the Tibetan sky. Doctor Who, a pinkish hue with a black border. Marco Polo in red. John Lucarotti in red. Impressionistic style, I'd say. Very impressive, that one.
Yeah, that sounds a really nice one. That gives you a bit of everything, you know. And it's quite a good one, including there's not much of the actual, you know, the Doctor or their companions. That's all the main players of the actual book on the cover. I think that's a bit of a different outlook, but that's a really good one, though.
And if you could let us know if it was a recreation by somebody else, which sometimes happens with the audio books, folks, but that's just more or less extended on the CD cover with the 13th Doctor logo, which is over everything now. Marco Polo changed to black writing and red by Xenia Merton, still in red.
Yeah, I think those colours work well. I don't know if the new 13th Doctor logo works, or we have sort of no choice on that now. That's on everything, because of joys of BBC branding, where, you know, every classic thing now has the 13th logo, basically.
We have the overnight viewing figures for resolution. All figures down across all programmes for that time of year. It was watched by 5.15 million viewers, 22.4% of the total TV audience. It was the fourth highest programme for New Year's Day after Luther, two on ITV, which were Coronation Street and Emmerdale.
I was predicted right. That was, I didn't know the ratings for the other two things, but that was my prediction. It would be higher than Doctor Who, unfortunately. I just don't understand it, because, you know, Doctor Who and Luther, which is still on BBC Final episode tonight, is absolutely brilliant. The Doctor Who is brilliant, and Luther is absolutely brilliant. We will need a strong stomach for Luther, but it is brilliant. How did it get so bad? I'm hoping it triples on catch-up, hopefully.
Yes, I think it deserves much better, but the question has to be asked again. Should it have been called Resolution of the Dalek, or the Daleks? You know, would that have brought more people in?
Well, to be bluntly honest, if they actually put Dalek in the, you know, sort of advertisement and sort of mentioned it was a Dalek, I think that would have been easily the same sort of ratings that, you know, The Woman Who Fell from Earth got, basically. It's an hour episode. It's very much the way they've laid the episode out. It's very much like that first episode. So I think they made a little bit of a mistake there by, you know, trying to keep the secret at these Daleks all the way. And we knew it was Daleks because Nick Briggs had tweeted about 3 weeks ago on Twitter that it was Daleks. So everybody knew it was Daleks. So they could easily, like 3 weeks ago, sort of done a new advert like they did for over Christmas and let people know it's actually a Dalek in it. And I think that would have maybe tripled the rating, because that's Big Finish, though. They put a Dalek on the front cover of their CD, their sales go up by 30%. So, you know, it does work.
Yeah, I do think missed a trick there, but looking ahead to season 12, some rumours it may start on New Year's Day next year. Some people saying it may start around March, as that'll be 15 years since Eccleston's first series debuted. Unfortunately, a few rumours from people who have been a bit hit and miss with their rumours and do tend to want to stir things up. One at least has said October 2020 for the next series, but I can see that being way too far away when the Director General has said early 2020.
Well, I've seen that as well. I think it's basically going to be, you'll get the Christmas / New Year's Eve episode like we had this year, and then you'll probably get a month off. And then the January-February drama schedule 2020, you'll get the new season, I reckon.
Yeah, Sal, that'll be good. And character-wise, what would you like to see? We've mentioned we want a lot more from Yaz, really, and I'd say the other main issue is we want some more returning villains as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd like a couple of Chris Chibnall, his writer's own ideas, because some have been really good, but I would like maybe a slight peppering more of classic villains and having a reason for them, you know, or redoing like he did with the Dalek, you know, made it his own by coming up with a new idea there, sort of. Yeah, bring Cybermen back. We'll have them, you know, in some new form or new way, basically. Sort of bring a classic back. We'll have it in different. I quite like to see, I think, the way, you know, we could mention sort of globalisation and pollution, I think it'd be really nice to have the Sea Devils back. I'd like them to be back, or something completely new, something, you know, new but old, I think would work. Or
put in a new angle, things like he's done with his Dalek.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the way to go ahead. Still have classic villains or classic monsters, but do it in some way that is his own way of doing it. And I think with the, you know, Resolution of the Dalek episode, it worked, because you knew it was going to be a Dalek, but you had the whole process of the whole squid and, you know, the whole reason it got there. And I thought these sort of pilot dot, you know, Daleks were really a clever idea.
Yes, I'm pretty amazed. 14 years now since Doctor Who came back to screen, and no Sea Devils yet. I'm pretty surprised about that.
I don't know. It's because if the license is so complicated, or whoever, you know, you can't get them back, or B, they just don't think they work. But I think they've worked really well with a good bit of CGI these days, where you can have, you know, sort of different races, I mean, under the sea, and the amount of global warming and sort of global events, you know, are going on these days. You know, we've got, you know, we've very naughtily sneaked Brexit into the New Year's Day episode, so I'm sure we could come up with some reason.
And the Twitter pitchforks would be out again, you know, global warming.
Oh, I know. Well, the Twitter pitchforks went mental with that whole unit sort of reference being sort of mothballed because of Brexit, basically. I think, you know, people nearly had a meltdown on Twitter about that.
Should we be sticking out, do you think, to 10 episodes? Perhaps because you've got a bit of a longer production time. Perhaps it would be nice if it went back up to, say, 12 or 13.
I think it should go back to 12. I don't know if 13 will. I think it should go up to 12 because I think there was a lot of room for breathing space in these episodes this season. That wasn't enough. I think there should be at least one two-parter in the schedule, basically. Maybe more than one. But I think there should be at least one, you know, with a story that can cope with two episodes. You see what I mean? I think we've had a couple this season what could have easily done with a second part to explain more detail, I think.
People absolutely love the cliffhanger at the end of The Woman Who Fell to Earth, and that's the last cliffhanger we've seen.
Yeah, I think still to this day, cliffhangers do work. You know, that one was great at the end of, you know, when we didn't know if they were alive or not alive at the end of the first episode. That worked so well, and you had to wait. And you're not telling me what that didn't turn into sort of a water cooler, sort of, you know, in the playground talking points. Of course it does, but I don't know. I think there should definitely be at least one two-part, I think. You know, at least one thing where you can get big storyline, big characters, you know, and make it expansive. And I think, yeah, definitely having more female writers and directors has worked. And, you know, maybe we get Rachel Taddeley back. She'd be fantastic again, having her back. And I think definitely continue with having more female, you know, writers, directors, because it works. And I think, you know, keep on expanding the ideas. Don't have to stick to the classic. Well, if you do classic, do what you did. I said, do what you did with the Dalek. Make them something new.
Yes, Rachel Taddeley did tweet after she'd seen Resolution that she loved the way the new TARDIS was shot, so perhaps she will be coming back, as she hinted she'd like to when she had more time.
Oh, I think that that is one thing that has certainly stood out in this whole new season, is that TARDIS looks stunning now. I think the shots on this episode were beautifully layered, and they were shot really well, these new lights. So, yeah, I think there's more to be done with that TARDIS. It'd be great to see the swimming pool, the library again, maybe, and that sort of give it more flesh out. Well, I think at some point, you know, because they've got time, I think some point they're going to sit down and do like they did with Torchwood season one. They are going to go, yeah, that worked, that didn't work, that worked. And then they'll make all these lovely little edits and cuts, and the next season will be so much better. Because you could see, just with the New Year's Day episode, where he could see things didn't work and did work. And that was the reason I think that episode was one of the best ones of the season.
Fully agreed, Al. Entertainment-wise, what have you been looking at over Christmas and looking forward to most in 2019?
This is quite a long list because it's been Christmas. Right, over Christmas, I watched Watch It Down, which was obviously good, but the bunnies were too confusing and didn't look quite right. Well, it was still good. I watched the ABC Murders with John Malkovich being Poirot, and that was absolutely excellent once it got going. I've been watching Luther, which is fantastic. If you love a bit of very dark crime, messy, nasty London cop drama with Idris Elba, then you'll love it. Started watching Les Miserables, which is a bit slow, but I think we'll get better. Andrew Davis's new dramatisation of the Victor Hugo book, very good, very dramatic. I still want to see Mary Poppins Returns because I haven't got around to that Joys of Christmas. That's on the 2019 film list. Of course, we've got running up to the Oscars, so I'll be going probably to see all the Oscar films. I want to go and see The Favoured with Olivia Colman in. Yeah, just general stuff, really. You know, it's the joys of January where, you know, people go, oh, it's January. I find January not too bad because there's so many films and stuff to see. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, well, I sat down a few times over Christmas, you know, get the old 12-inch pizza in, Al, and watch things. Went to the cinema a few times, you know, to keep the youngsters of the family happy. I saw Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet on...
Which you liked, didn't you? I was surprised you liked that.
That was wonderful. I hadn't actually seen the first one, so I watched the second one first, and then the first one was on TV a few days later.
I much preferred the second. It was just too loud and bright for my liking.
Same again for the second one, but we ended up having a private screening in Bristol unintentionally because we went at 11 o'clock in the morning and we were the only three people in there.
Oh, I loved that. I loved that. There's a couple of times I've been to the cinema and you end up with just your own private screen. I think when I went to see Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet in the summer many, many, many years ago, me and my brother had the whole screen to set up. I do like that sometimes.
And then last weekend, I went to see, which is by far the best Transformers movie by a long way now, Bumblebee.
Have you seen Bumblebee?
Yes, saw it on Sunday.
Is it good?
It's absolutely brilliant. Just the brilliant way to do the 80s, if you remember that decade, folks.
Oh, yes. I'm born
really
in that
good
era,
origin
so
story. Tails back on the sort of spinny camera, which can give you a headache sequences. It's more sort of old school action, but brilliantly well directed tension wise. Some very good performances. Just one of the old school popcorn movies, which is very enjoyable.
Oh, that's what we want this time. Yeah. So it is Transformers, but a good Transformers film then.
Yes.
Because I did go and suffer through, I think, was it called The Last Night, the last one, and that was dire. It's sort of been hit and miss, the last couple of Transformers films. I think the first one's really good, the second one was terrible, I think the third and fourth one have been pretty hit and miss.
I think ever since the Zack Snyder Man of Steel came out, I've started to have headaches in the cinema in certain action sequences at my age.
Why?
It just moves too fast now, Al, you know, it's very...
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah. But is that a normal thing, though, Transformers, a big bashing monster bit at the end?
Not over the top, because it's only sort of one or two on one, whereas we get multiple Autobots and Decepticons in the earlier films.
Oh, that's good then, I think that works better. On that sort of same thing, have you seen the Hellboy trailer yet?
The new Hellboy, have I? I can't actually remember. No,
it's
I don't think I have.
It's been out for about a week or two, the new Hellboy trailer. It looks very good. I think they've gone back to basics with it.
No, but sort of what I'm looking forward to most this year are Captain Marvel in March and Infinity War Endgame in April, I think, Al.
Is that April now, Infinity War Endgame? The title everybody knew about last August, because it was obvious.
And a certain franchise reaching the end of its most recent trilogy, current trilogy, in December. What's it called again? Star something?
Star Wars Episode 9, as we don't know the title yet.
Hope we'll get a trailer or a title soon.
Well, I think so, because they're saying first big trailer is going to be at the Super Bowl thing, which is like the first week of February.
January, but otherwise, TV-wise, I've caught up to season 3 of Lucifer now and finished season 2 of Better Call Saul, the Breaking Bad spin-off.
I was thinking the other things I think I am looking forward to this year is seeing News live for about the third time in June and going to see Rudimental at the Royal Albert Hall in March, and also probably if we can get tickets, the Macroterror in March.
In the BFI, yeah, looking forward to that animation.
That will be fun to see what they've done with that, all these nice creepy, crawly, crabby things.
And Phil Morris gave us one of his teases at the Missing Believed Wiped session in December at the BFI, saying that he hopes 2019 will be full of surprises, so we shall see.
We shall see, because it'd be great, you know, if we did get things like Marco Polo and all those sort of things that would have vanished. You know, it might have them stored. They must have gone somewhere in the world. They couldn't have completely vanished.
Who knows, and we know that you found these most recent Morecambe and Wise episodes, which were shown over Christmas in Sierra Leone in an abandoned cinema, and apparently said there was other things there which you can't talk about yet, so
there you go. It's probably in some weird and wonderful time of Africa. They probably went to, you know, they probably BBC sent them out, and then, you know, with all the different sort of civil wars out there, he's got sort of put in a bunker, probably knowing our luck.
It's a fascinating story, Al, you know, various stories of whether TV studios were razed to the ground in civil wars, and some suggestions that they were, some that they weren't, and the fact that these all turned up in Sierra Leone, probably in the last few years at an abandoned cinema. I think back in the day we had Dalek Master Plan, the most recent find in 2004, turn up in the basement of a Mormon church in London, so you never know where.
You never know, because they just get stored in those beautiful big old canisters, which has got stored in basements and bunkers. They were great, those sort of big things, and I think I always hope, because, you know, there's so much stuff that I'm stupid the BBC either wiped or gave to other climates in the sort of early, late 60s, early 70s. So there's sort of stuff, those are still there. Saying that Morecambe Wise, I did catch up Earth Day with the rather good sort of drama, sort of documentary, obviously on BBC 4 over Christmas, I missed, about Ernie, you know, the manager, the person who wrote all their jokes.
Okay, yeah, I think he wasn't, because I watched the recovered episodes and I wasn't that impressed, but that was the very first season before he came on board, so I think things improved dramatically then.
I think there's a very interesting sort of thing, if you ever watch any Eric and Ernie, they were like the Ann and Deck of their period, and I think before they got somebody who wrote good jokes, they weren't the greatest. They needed that sort of direction, I think.
Ant and Dec aren't fit to wipe their boots, in my opinion, but you know.
I would agree. I was just saying, in the same sort of concept.
You know, yeah, popularity wise, you mean?
Popularity wise, and sort of, you know, mammoth programs and that sort of thing. They are that sort of saying, you know, the sort of, you know, you think it'd be the Michael McIntyre, that sort of program, that sort of period was, you know, Eric and Ernie, 100 times better than any of the people we've got now. But
lucky enough, I was lucky enough to see it in a preview screening I mentioned last time, and it's out officially in about a week, Al. Stan and Ollie, go and see it.
Oh, I will go and see it, but I still think it should be on BBC 4 from what you said.
It will be eventually, but, you know, it might be a year or so.
Yeah, I will go and see it, because it sounds really good, what I've read the reviews, and it looks really good. I think, you know, it will, and I'm very interested in that sort of period of Broadbill and sort of American cinema, so I think I will go and see it, because it'll be at a lovely picture house down there next to not the Odeon, but it'll be in a nicer screen. But yeah, it's just an interesting one, because I think that will be, you know, I don't know if it's been done, or it should have been on BBC 4, but, you know, we get a lot of things in England what may well be BBC and end up in cinemas for some weird and wonderful reason, but, you know, that's the way it seems to work these days.
Speaking of Steve Coogan, I think there is a new Alan Partridge series this year. That's another thing to look forward to.
There is, at some point this month, I think it starts.
Back on the BBC, back on the BBC.
I'm hoping the Friday TV on Friday in BBC is terrible. I'm hoping it's going to be in that sort of comedy area. It's maybe like a mix, I think, of the one show and not this sort of documentary. But it'll be interesting because, you know, are they going to, you know, because I was thinking, I watched Over Christmas, one of his Christmas things, and they were pretty close to the knuckle in some points. And are they going to water it down because it's now back on the BBC instead of on Sky Atlantic? Next time on the Target Files, we'll be discussing the Doctor Who Target novelisation, Doctor Who, The Caves of Anzani, written by Terence Dix, and read the audiobook by Peter Davison. If you want to comment on any of our stuff on Twitter, please use the Twitter handle DW Target Files, or go to our Facebook group, or please review and rate us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Doctor Who Target Files Resolution Review featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. 13th Doctor theme composed originally by Sagan Akinola. Version for the podcast by Borna Matosic, BORNA MATOSIC, channel on YouTube. Doctor Who Target Files Resolution Review was recorded in Swansea, Wales, UK, and Exeter, Devon, England, UK, during January 2019.